Picture this, if you will. You're an endocrinologist seeing a 28-year-old female referred to your clinic for suspected hypothyroidism. You begin taking a history, and she tells you about her chronic fatigue, constipation, menstrual irregularity, and, with some embarrassment, that she thinks she's started lactating. "It's really embarrassing," she mutters. "I have to stuff tissues in my bra, otherwise it leaks through my shirt." Her labs reveal decreased T3 and T4 levels, an elevated thyroid-stimulating hormone, and you suspect that her primary care physician was correct. You ask her what her primary care physician explained to her about hypothyroidism, and it seems that for the most part, she's been well informed about what to expect. "But that doesn't explain the, you know, the milk," she exclaims, "and I really want that to stop." How do you explain your patient's galactorrhea in the context of the suspected thyroid disorder? And welcome to Audiobricks. I'm Arjun Iyer, bringing topics from endocrinology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Describe the regulatory hierarchy of the hypothalamic pituitary axis. 2. List the hormones controlled by the hypothalamic pituitary axis. 3. List the hormones secreted by the anterior pituitary and state the hypothalamic hormones that modulate their release. 4. Explain how hormones negatively feed back on the hypothalamus and the anterior pituitary gland. And 5. Explain the function of the posterior pituitary hormones oxytocin and vasopressin, and explain how their secretion is regulated. Part 1. What is the hypothalamic pituitary axis? The pituitary gland is a pea-sized gland that dangles down from the base of the brain, nestled in its own bespoke seat in the skull base called the cella turcica. It's often called the master gland, controlling the function of many other glands from its bony throne. But the pituitary itself is controlled by the hypothalamus, a region of the brain immediately superior to the pituitary, via neurons and a specialized portal venous system that travels down the stalk of the pituitary, otherwise known as its infundibulum. And it's this connection that links the central nervous system to the endocrine system. So, the hypothalamus is the regulator of the pituitary hormone release, and by extension, the downstream effects of those hormones. In turn, the hormones feed back on the hypothalamus and pituitary to modulate their own release and maintain homeostasis. This stimulation feedback system is together named the hypothalamic pituitary axis, and is a critical concept in understanding the regulation of many of the hormones in our body. Now, each hormone itself could be the topic of its own podcast, but in this episode, we're going to cover the general pathways for pituitary stimulation. To begin, the hypothalamus can regulate pituitary hormone secretion in one of three ways. Most commonly, the hypothalamus utilizes a specialized portal venous system that allows very low concentrations of hypothalamic hormones to reach the pituitary directly without being diluted by the entire venous circulation. These hypothalamic hormones travel down the hypophyseal portal vessels, which run along the pituitary stalk. Second, in some cases, the hypothalamus actually sends axonal projections down the pituitary stalk that synapse onto anterior pituitary cells, and this provides direct neuronal regulation of hormone release. And finally, cells in certain hypothalamic nuclei send axonal projections down the infundibulum, which terminate directly on pituitary capillary beds, where they release hormones into the bloodstream. It's this collection of axon projections that actually makes up the posterior pituitary. So, while the posterior pituitary is essentially an extension of the hypothalamus, the anterior pituitary is a gland that receives input from the hypothalamus and releases hormones in response to them. Some anterior pituitary hormones, like prolactin and growth hormone, stimulate their target cells directly. But the anterior pituitary is probably best known for releasing trophic hormones, hormones whose primary purpose is to regulate hormone secretion by another endocrine organ. The thyroid, gonads, and adrenal cortex are all controlled by this three-step regulatory axis. All right, gang, pop quiz time. List three ways in which cells of the hypothalamus regulate pituitary hormone release. The glandular cells of the anterior pituitary are regulated either by hypothalamic hormones traveling down the portal system or by neurons traveling down the pituitary stalk. The posterior pituitary is basically just a collection of axons that release hormones synthesized in hypothalamic cell bodies. Part 2. What hormones are secreted by the anterior pituitary? The anterior pituitary gland secretes quite a number of important hormones, and they follow the mnemonic FLAT pig, which stands for FSH, LH, ACTH, TSH, prolactin, and growth hormone. And while a lot of mnemonics just plain suck, this one is super useful for a number of reasons, so you'll want to remember it. Now, the first four hormones of flat pig, remind me what they are again? FSH, LH, ACTH, and TSH. Now, these ones act mainly by stimulating target glands to release their hormones. FSH and LH stand for follicle-stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, respectively, and they primarily affect the ovaries and testes. Release of FSH and LH by the anterior pituitary is stimulated by hypothalamic gonadotropin-releasing hormone, or GnRH. Which makes sense, right? Because these trophic hormones affect the gonads? Now, in very simplistic terms, FSH and LH cause target glands to secrete androgens like testosterone and estrogens like estradiol. But especially when it comes to the menstrual cycle and ovulation, there's a very complex system of feedback and coordination that really deserves its own audio brick. We actually have one already on the menstrual cycle, so for more details, go check that one out. Furthermore, FSH and LH control aspects of placental development and pregnancy, making these hormones actually pretty darn complicated. Next, ACTH stands for adrenocorticotrophic hormone, and like its name suggests, it primarily affects the adrenal cortex. The hypothalamic hormone corticotropin-releasing hormone, or CRH, stimulates ACTH release, which then goes on to stimulate the release of cortisol and aldosterone by the adrenal cortex. ACTH also stimulates the growth of cells in the adrenal cortex. Now, in broad terms, cortisol is the most important end product in this hypothalamic pituitary axis, as it's most dependent on the hypothalamus and pituitary for regulation, and it plays the biggest role in negative feedback on the hypothalamus and pituitary. While ACTH does stimulate aldosterone secretion, its synthesis and release is primarily regulated by the renin-angiotensin system. Finally, TSH stands for thyroid-stimulating hormone, and it primarily affects, the thyroid gland. Hypothalamic thyrotropin-releasing hormone, or TRH, stimulates TSH release, which then causes the thyroid gland to synthesize and secrete the thyroid hormones T3 and T4. So, we covered the flat portion of the flat pig hormones. Unlike flat hormones, the pig hormones aren't trophic hormones. They directly affect target tissues. Remind me what pig stands for again? Prolactin and growth hormone, right. Prolactin primarily acts on the breast to stimulate milk production. Of note, milk release is actually controlled by the hormone oxytocin. Under normal physiologic circumstances, hypothalamic regulation of prolactin release is pretty complex and multifactorial, but there are a couple of regulatory pathways that cause increased prolactin secretion under pathologic circumstances. First, prolactin-producing cells, or lactotrophs, are neurally regulated by the hypothalamus and are inhibited at baseline by the constant secretion of hypothalamic dopamine. Weird, right? So, turning off the dopaminergic neurons running down the pituitary infundibulum actually disinhibits the lactotrophs, which then start secreting more prolactin. That's why one side effect of antipsychotics, which often work by inhibiting dopamine, is galactorrhea, because they disinhibit the secretion of prolactin. Now, if you thought that one was weird, turns out the hypothalamic pituitary axis for thyroid hormone also influences the hypothalamic pituitary axis for prolactin. Thyrotropin-releasing hormone, which is secreted by which organ? The hypothalamus, right? Well, TRH not only stimulates thyrotrophs to release TSH, to a lesser extent, it stimulates lactotrophs to release prolactin. And to get a better sense of which pathologies are associated with this regulatory pathway, well, we're going to need to learn a little bit more about negative feedback. But let's put a pin in this kernel of knowledge, because we'll definitely be coming back to it later. Moving on from prolactin, growth hormone, or GH, influences multiple different organ systems to, grow. GH release is stimulated by hypothalamic growth hormone releasing hormone, otherwise known as GHRH, or somatotropin. It's also inhibited by the hypothalamic hormone GHIH, also called somatostatin. See how intuitive endocrinology is? Now, growth hormone works in part through an intermediary growth factor, IGF-1, which is released by the liver upon stimulation by GH. Both GH and IGF-1 then cause bone growth and enhance muscle mass, to really oversimplify things, but for now, that'll do. Alright, that was a lightning-fast review of the regulatory structure of the various hypothalamic pituitary axes. Now it's time for a flash quiz. What two stimuli can increase prolactin secretion? The answer is increased concentrations of TRH and decreased stimulation by dopaminergic neurons from the hypothalamus. Remember, prolactin secretion is tonically suppressed at baseline by dopaminergic neurons. Part 3. What is negative feedback on the anterior pituitary? Now, the concept of feedback is integral to various hypothalamic pituitary axes, and it describes how the levels of different regulatory signals and trophic hormones from the hypothalamus and pituitary change in response to the levels of downstream hormones that control. Now, the primary role of feedback is to ensure homeostasis, so the most common type of feedback is negative feedback. And that's where the hypothalamus and pituitary sense elevated levels of hormone and go, "Whoa, hold up there, Mr. Thyroid, don't get crazy on me now." Or Mr. Adrenal, or Mrs. Ovaries, you get the idea. In response, they decrease their stimulation of that gland that's secreting the excessive amounts of hormone, which in theory should correct the problem. Now let's get into some specific details about each individual axis. The axes for thyroid hormone and cortisol work pretty similarly. Elevated levels of T3 and T4 result in feedback suppression of the hypothalamus and pituitary, decreasing secretion of TRH and TSH respectively. And what hormone changes would you expect in a patient with elevated cortisol levels? Increased cortisol, and actually any glucocorticoid like prednisone, will feedback suppress the hypothalamus and pituitary, resulting in decreased levels of CRH and ACTH. Similarly, the hypothalamus and pituitary downregulate the gonads when they sense elevated levels of estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, as well as a hormone known as inhibin. They do this by decreasing the secretion of GnRH, FSH, and LH. But again, this gets a lot more complicated, especially when it comes to the menstrual cycle. So think of this as an in-general sort of thing. Now, this is actually the mechanism by which oral contraceptives work. Elevating the levels of serum progesterone and or estrogens at baseline, which suppresses the levels of FSH and LH to an extent that it actually prevents ovulation from occurring. Finally, growth hormone's a bit different. As it turns out, it's not growth hormone levels that are primarily involved in feedback suppression, but rather it's intermediary growth factor secreted by the liver. Remember what that growth factor's called? If you said insulin-like growth factor, or IGF-1, you'd be right. IGF-1 is the hormone sensed by the hypothalamus and pituitary, and when elevated levels are sensed, they downregulate the secretion of GHRH and growth hormone, respectively. Part 4. What hormones are released by the posterior pituitary? All right. You're all probably sick of hormones by now. Relax. The posterior pituitary is a lot more straightforward than the anterior. Like I mentioned, there's no real hypothalamic pituitary axis for the hormones of the posterior pituitary, since what we call the posterior pituitary isn't actually a gland at all, but rather a collection of axon terminals from cells in the hypothalamus that release the hormones synthesized in hypothalamic cell bodies into the pituitary capillary beds. So regulation is as simple as the hypothalamic cells deciding, based on an external stimulus, that the body needs more oxytocin or vasopressin, sending that hormone down the pituitary stalk and releasing it via the posterior pituitary. Vasopressin, or antidiuretic hormone, is secreted when the hypothalamus senses that serum sodium concentrations are too high, or hyperosmolar, or when it senses that the blood pressure is too low. Serum sodium concentration is detected by the hypothalamic cells themselves, but blood pressure is detected by baroreceptors in the aorta and carotid arteries, which provide neural input to the hypothalamus to tell it what's going on in the peripheral circulation. In response, the posterior pituitary secretes ADH, and if you're wondering why two pretty different problems warrant the use of one hormone, well, it helps to think of ADH as the hormone that coordinates the body's response to the very common physiologic condition of dehydration. I mean, I bet probably half of you all are dehydrated right now, and the lack of free water intake tends to both decrease your blood pressure from low fluid volume and concentrate your serum sodium, since free water is, after all, hypotonic. ADH helps correct these problems by causing the kidneys to retain free water, inducing peripheral vasoconstriction to raise the blood pressure, and increasing the sensation of thirst so that you'll actually get off your butt and drink some water for a change instead of pounding energy drinks. When these problems are corrected, namely the blood pressure increases and the serum osmolality decreases, this serves as the negative feedback signal for the hypothalamic cells to decrease their secretion of ADH. Now, oxytocin's regulation is actually a lot more complicated and involves positive feedback during pregnancy, which is discussed a lot more in the reproductive section. But in short, during childbirth and delivery, oxytocin is released in the final stages of labor to increase contractions in the uterus. Oxytocin is also responsible for milk letdown, or ejection reflex, that contracts the breast tissue during lactation, as opposed to prolactin, which stimulates milk production. All right, final knowledge check, gang. What are the two main stimuli for vasopressin secretion? Vasopressin, or antidiuretic hormone, is secreted when serum sodium levels are too high or when blood pressure is too low. And that's a wrap. Let's see what you guys learned about the hypothalamic pituitary axis. First, can you explain the difference in the regulatory relationship between the hypothalamus and the anterior versus posterior pituitary? The hypothalamus regulates hormone secretion from the anterior pituitary, which is a gland, and it does so primarily by sending its own hormonal signals down the hypophyseal portal system. In contrast, the hypothalamus can't really be said to regulate the posterior pituitary. The posterior pituitary is just made up of the axon terminals of neurons with cell bodies in the hypothalamus. These cells synthesize hormones in the hypothalamic cell bodies, transport them down axons of the pituitary stalk, and then secrete them into the pituitary capillary beds. Second, can you list the 6 hormones secreted by the anterior pituitary? And can you match them to the hypothalamic stimulus that's primarily responsible for regulating the release? The hormones of the anterior pituitary can be remembered by the mnemonic FLAT PIG, and that stands for FSH, LH, ACTH, TSH, prolactin, and growth hormone. FSH and LH are stimulated by gonadotropin-releasing hormone, ACTH by corticotropin-releasing hormone, TSH by thyrotropin-releasing hormone. See the pattern? The hypothalamic hormones typically have releasing hormone at the end. Prolactin and growth hormone are a bit weird. Growth hormone is not only stimulated by GHRH, but inhibited by GHIH. And prolactin's regulation is multifactorial, but involves stimulation by TRH and tonic inhibition by dopaminergic neurons from the hypothalamus. Third, can you define negative feedback in terms of the hypothalamic pituitary axis? Negative feedback is when the hypothalamus and pituitary decrease their stimulation of target glands in response to elevated levels of the final hormone in that particular endocrine axis. For example, when the hypothalamus and anterior pituitary sense increased thyroid hormones, they decrease thyroid stimulation via decreased TRH and TSH. Finally, can you name the 2 hormones of the posterior pituitary? The posterior pituitary gland releases oxytocin and vasopressin, otherwise known as antidiuretic hormone. Oxytocin stimulates uterine contraction and the milk letdown reflex. Vasopressin causes peripheral arterial vasoconstriction, renal water retention, and increased thirst drive. Now, armed with your newfound knowledge, let's get back to that patient for the beginning of the episode. A 28-year-old female presents to your office with suspected hypothyroidism based on her symptoms, decreased levels of thyroid hormone, and elevated thyroid-stimulating hormone. How would you explain her symptom of galactorrhea in the context of her suspected thyroid disorder? You take out your notepad, and you draw a simple diagram of the hypothalamic-pituitary-thyroid axis. You explain, the thyroid gland produces thyroid hormones that keep your metabolism going, but the pituitary is what makes sure the thyroid gland keeps the levels of thyroid hormones stable. The hypothalamus, in turn, is what regulates the pituitary. Now, when thyroid hormone levels are too low, like yours are now, the hypothalamus and pituitary try to signal louder and louder for the thyroid gland to work harder and release more hormone. Only problem is, if your thyroid gland's simply not working, then yelling louder is basically like beating a dead horse. There's really no point. But here's the weird thing, you say. In the case of the thyroid regulatory pathway, it's not just thyroid cells that are listening in. Weirdly enough, the pituitary cells that control lactation are also eavesdropping on the thyroid conversation. They're just usually not listening very hard. But when the hypothalamus is basically screaming at the top of its lungs, using a hormone signal called TRH, well, then those cells start listening in, and that can cause lactation. She nods, looking very interested. So, how do we fix it? She asks. Well, first we have to run a couple more tests to prove that that's what's actually going on. But if I'm right, you say, then treating your thyroid condition with supplemental thyroid hormones means that the hypothalamus can stop signaling so loudly. and then those lactation-controlling cells can settle down and go back to sleep. At least until you need them for real. She laughs appreciatively, and thanks you for your time. And that's our show. If you like what you heard, make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. You can enjoy the full Brix experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already. Until next time, friends.